Hello there, and welcome to the Comic Book Tesseract, your weekly comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Justin Chalupka. Every week we review and preview the world of comics, along with other facets of geek chic culture. Something I wanted to hit on first thing this week. Recently I had asked a bunch of friends and relatives to check out the podcast, give me their feedback, and most of it was very positive, very complimentary. Thank you, all of you, for listening and providing us with your insight. I did, however, notice a trend between a lot of people that responded back, and I wanted to address that first off because I think it's important to talk about. What I found was many times what people were saying is that they enjoyed the podcast, they enjoyed listening to Jason and I, even though they weren't necessarily really comic readers or they weren't big into comics. And that's what I wanted to hit on. People that say that they're not into comics or that they don't really read comics. If you don't really read comics, I can understand that it's just not something that you do. But when you say you're not into comics, I almost kind of shudder a little bit. There was something I heard once, and it was related to manga and anime at the time, but it's just as relevant for comic books as it is for any other form of media that exists. Anybody that's listening to this right now, listening to my voice, you're a human being, I would hope. All human beings love stories. Whether that story is done through a novel, whether it's a biographical or historical account, whether it's a song or an interpretive dance or a TV or a movie, even a sporting event on TV or live in person. All of these things tell a story in some way, shape, or form. All forms of media are nothing more than a conveyance of information. Stories being the most common thing that is conveyed. And comics are no different. To say that you don't like comics or that you don't care for comics would be like saying you don't care for TV or you don't like movies. Now, you start getting into other things like I don't like musicals or I don't like interpretive dance. That usually stems either from something specific to that form that is displeasurable or more along the lines of, and I hesitate to use this word because I feel it's a little bit weighted, but it's truthful nonetheless, and that's ignorance. Not necessarily in a demeaning way, but an ignorance in the sense that there hasn't been a lot of exposure to that particular form of media. I could say I don't like interpretive dance, but I've never really seen any, so I can't say that for sure. There are other types of things that I have seen that I don't particularly care for. I would say I don't particularly care for death metal music, which isn't to say that even though I don't listen to it all the time, I shouldn't say I'm not into it. There, I'm very sure, are death metal bands and death metal music out there that I would find quite enjoyable, especially if there was somebody who is very keyed into that particular scene, willing to help me out a bit. Show me what it is that makes that particular media speak to them. What it is they like about it, why it is that they like it, and why they like some types of that media as opposed to others. That's exactly what I know I do, and I'm going to speak for Jason here as well. Unfortunately, he can't be with us this week. He is out of town. But when we get together to do this podcast, we're trying to share that. We're trying to share what it is that we like about comics and about comic books. And what I think we want to get out of this, or what we want to convey out of this more than anything else, is we're trying to impart our love for this media in a way that will get others to dig a little deeper, look a little more, take another glance at the media itself. And instead of writing it off as, I don't like comics, so, okay, yeah, they're talking about this thing, but I'm not really going to pay attention to it. We want to try to open people's eyes and make them understand that there are lots of things out there and lots of different kinds of comics and different ways to do comics that there is the comic book out there for you. It does exist. There's no way in the wide world of comics that there isn't something that will speak to you. We probably just haven't found it yet. And it's very likely that what you may like doesn't fall into my or Jason's wheelhouse, so it may not end up being discussed here. But for anybody that's listening, I would like to make this plea to you. Take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes out of a week, and do a little looking around. Maybe one day this month, go to your friendly local comic book shop. There's one near you, or at least in relatively close distance. Or if not, check out some of the places online, like Comixology or something like that. And go and look around. Just a little bit. See what's out there and see if there's anything that makes your eyebrow raise a little bit. That makes you think, that's interesting. Just give the media a chance. And don't only do this with comics. Do this with anything. Do this with everything. If you're not a big sports fan, flip over to ESPN and just spend a little time looking around. You might find something that's interesting. The Olympics are on right now. Even if you don't particularly like professional sports, maybe there's something in the amateur arena that might interest you. If you don't like musicals, flip through a bit. See what's out there. Maybe some of the things that are the stereotypical musicals, such as, Music Man or Sound of Music or things like that, don't necessarily turn you on. Look at some of the newer ones, things like Rent or Avenue Q. Things that are pushing the envelope of modern musical might be more in your wheelhouse. Expand your horizons. And this is something that everybody should do every day anyways. And if you want to expand your horizons in comics, as I obviously believe you should, even if you don't do the 15 minutes at your local comic shop, well, hey, you're already listening to me here. Spend the time, at least of this podcast, listening to the books that I'm going to talk about, and see if there's anything that I'm reading that raises your eyebrow or makes you think. I sincerely hope so. But enough of that. Let's go on to the reviews. Something I want to do this week also that's a little bit different, because this is a solo show, is one of the other feedback points that we got is sometimes people will get a little bit lost in our reviews because we'll start talking about the stuff that's going on in the book without any frame of reference. So somebody that's kind of jumping in and listening to us for the first time definitely will not understand what we're talking about. So as I go through each of the books this week, I'm going to try to give a little bit of not just a quick synopsis of the story, but I want to get a little bit deeper into the description as well, into more of the essence of the book, so that you can understand not only what it's about, but what it's doing right now, why and how. So I'm also going to apologize in advance here for a second. I have been fighting this slight sniffle all day long. It's killing me at the moment, so I'll do my best not to snark on the microphone so you guys don't have to listen to that. I'll do my best. I can't promise anything. Anyways, first book up this week is the quintessential superhero, the one that everybody knows, Superman. Issue number 11. To say that I'm going to explain Superman would be a bit foolish, I think. I think everybody knows who Superman is, what he is, what he's about. This book in particular, however, more specifically, I should say, is more about Superman's role in this new DC 52. DC Comics recently did a complete relaunch of all their titles, actually 11 months ago, exactly. And a lot of this relaunch shook up the characters quite a bit, both in specifics of their origins and in aspects of the characters themselves. Superman is still Superman. He's still truth, justice, and the American way. They've made him, I hesitate to say, a little bit edgier in the New 52, which they've done across the board to all their characters. So to single Superman out on that wouldn't really be fair to the character. But what the Superman book right now is about is his place in this new world that has been created, kind of defining what we know about him and redefining the things that are different. In this book, we find Clark Kent, who recently was almost outed as Superman, and false identity was actually laid on somebody else's lap, and Superman had to go and dissuade people from thinking that, in fact, he was Superman when he obviously was not. In doing so, he spurned Lois Lane's sister accidentally, who Clark Kent had been arranged to go and pick up from the airport, and he ended up ditching her because of other superhero shenanigans that were going on. So this book is the aftermath of his accidental spurning of Lois's sister. Also, it's him meeting up with Lois and her current boyfriend and the little bit of tension that's going on there. Superman and Lois in this world are not dating, not married, not anything that was existent in the previous version of the DC Universe. So this really is a reboot of the character as purely as you can define it. It's bringing it back to what popular culture knows of Superman. Faster than a speeding bullet, flies, laser eyes, cold breath, and has a thing for Lois, and is Clark Kent, the reporter, as his alter ego. A reason to read Superman over other titles that you may or may not be reading. First off, is It's familiar. Everybody knows Superman. You know Superman. I know Superman. Your mother knows Superman. Nobody is going to be confused about who and what this is. This is a book that you can jump into pretty much at any point, at any time, and you'll know what's going on, or at least have a pretty good idea. It's so approachable that this is almost sort of like a gateway drug as far as comics are concerned. This is a good place for anybody to jump in. Downside, Superman is the ultimate comic book trope. A lot of times when people say they don't like comic books, this is exactly what they're talking about. A standard caped superhero running around, punching bad guys, and saving the day. Granted, this book, as well as pretty much all comics right now, are so much more than that. So, to have that preconceived notion coming into comics, you're doing yourself a disservice, not only on this book, but on all books, because pretty much all comics, ever since probably the mid-90s, have gotten away from, here's a guy who has this amazing power and he's going to go out and do good, bad things with his power. It's stopped being about the powers and it started being about the characters. Comic books today focus on the individuals, the situations, and the issues that surround somebody that would be in that kind of situation, given these fantastic, this fantastic reality. And to exemplify what I mean, let me move on to the next book this week, which is Green Lantern. Green Lantern is a character that many people probably should know. There was the big movie, this last year with Ryan Reynolds that had a whole lot of hype behind it and performed very, very poorly. Whether that hype was as big as I think it is, being into the comics community and into the characters, that character specifically, I don't know how widespread it actually was because I don't really have my finger on the pulse of in that aspect. But I do know it was talked about a lot, even outside of the comics realm. So it at least had that much penetration. Green Lantern is a guy given a ring that's this ultimate weapon where it focuses his willpower into whatever it is that he wants to make it, any type of a construct, be it a big fist punching somebody or a complex inner working machine gun. It could be anything. But as I mentioned, this book is not about a guy with a ring who can do these things. Green Lantern, and in the greater scope of the Green Lantern universe, because there's actually quite a few books that tie into the same little niche of this world, has been described sometimes as a space cop. And it's not an unkind or inaccurate description, but for the Green Lantern title specifically, it does it a disservice because it is less about the space cop aspect, which actually, if you look over at the Green Lantern Core, a different book, that one's closer to the space cop kind of genre. And even in that one, it deals less with them being space cops and more with things along the lines of, say, the ethics of law enforcement or morality, the necessity or deterrence of emotions and personal judgment in the application of law or the creation of law or anything of that nature. But that's a different book. Green Lantern is about the guy with this ability. Recently, since the reboot, there's been an even bigger hitch where he has had an almost drug-like need for the power that he has. Not very directly in the sense of he doesn't have, he goes through withdrawal. The series started out with him having the power stripped from him and trying to live a normal life again. And it just wasn't working. He didn't have a car. He didn't have any credit. He had not lived on Earth for the past however many years. So he didn't know how to be a normal person anymore. And in trying, and as he was just starting to come to grips with that and just beginning to regain a bit of his humanity, if you want to look at it that way, he then gets forcibly and almost literally drug back into this superhero role by somebody who at one time was considered his greatest nemesis and is now taken over his position and is bestowing it back onto him with a immense number of limitations and mandates that he doesn't want to deal with. So fast forward from that point to now, they've been in some fights, they've dealt with some bad guys, pretty standard fare if you want to look at it that way. In this book, however, there has come a change of the roles, where as before, it was his nemesis, Sinestro, for those who know the character. Sinestro had control of Hal's ring. It was a construct that Sinestro himself had created, and that was how he was imposing his limitations. Something has now happened in that the roles have reversed. Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern, is no longer under the jurisdiction of Sinestro's whim and will. He now can do what he wants, whenever he wants, as he wants, with his new ring, including beating up Sinestro, which he sucker punches him just to make a point. This book also reintroduces a character from who originally was way back in Green Lantern's past, was kind of a B-list, hot, you know, tchotchke, really kind of a lame character back when he was first introduced by the name of Black Hand. Black Hand had this little gizmo that could suck the power out of Green Lantern's ring. Whoop-de-doo. Recently, within the past few years, Black Hand was reintroduced by the writer Jeff Johns in the Green Lantern books as a much more sinister and dangerous character. Not to mention very mentally unstable, which he never really was before. He was just sort of dopey in the past. With his reemergence before the Blackest Night event, which was an event that occurred in the DC universe about 4 years ago, I want to say, give or take. And I am not ashamed to say the Blackest Night event was actually what got me back into comics again, which I had not read since around the mid-90s. Is when I stopped reading comics, and the Blackest Night event is what pulled me back in. So with Black Hand's introduction back into the universe at that time, he was written back in as an extremely powerful character and one that was worthy of attention, one that really deserved to be taken seriously. He has since then gone through many, many, many changes, including definitely not limited to this New 52 reboot, where his power set is very death-centric. There was a whole thing where he was something called a Black Lantern, which was able to raise people from the dead and, in fact, was dead themselves. There's more to it than that, but as I've said, these stories go much deeper and get much more involved than what I can kind of gloss over just to give you as quick a synopsis as I can while still giving you the idea and the feeling behind this book. Speaking of, Green Lantern as a title right now is a mix of the story of a power struggle between Hal and Sinestro. That's been a very key point in the plot since the book restarted in the New 52. There's also a big lead-in to the next event that's going to be occurring across the Green Lantern books in the DC Universe that has to do with the Guardians of the Universe, the ones who actually created the Lanterns, created the Rings, set up all of this, where they have lost their faith in what they've created. So they're going to try to wipe the slate clean and try again with some sort of new way of imposing order on the universe. Needless to say, the Green Lanterns aren't real happy about this particular decision, and there's going to be a big, you know, dust up over the whole thing. So that's kind of coming down the line in this. The Green Lantern book, more so than any of the other titles in the Green Lantern family, even though it doesn't spend a lot of time on Earth, it feels more humanitarian than the other books do. The other books rely much more heavily on alien species and alien encounters to drive along their plots, and this one does not. It really does center on Hal and Sinestro, even though he is technically an alien himself. Their interactions are very, very human. And I guess you could almost say it's like the opposite of a buddy cop flick, where the two of them absolutely hate each other. And every time it starts to get near that same type of storyline that you would find in something like Rush Hour or buddy cop, Lethal Weapon is a great example. Just as they start to trust each other, you know, you're expecting that great buddy cop moment to kick in. It's brought painfully back into focus. These two absolutely hate each other and will do everything in their power to beat the crap out of each other as soon as it becomes feasible for them to do so. So the tension between those two characters really is a good driving point of this book. I would say if you do like that type of interpersonal drama, this is a good title to pick up as long as you don't care over much about the fact that it's set in space with aliens and whatever else. If you're looking for that type of story, this is where you want to go. I will say that this, along with things like Superman and a couple of the other books that I'm about to go over, the main, what people call the capes and cowls books, the traditional superhero books, although they do deal with these deeper issues, they do it much more superficially than other publishers and the titles that they produce get into. You can find other books out there, especially from things like Vertigo, from Image and IDW, Dark Horse is another big one, where they will do short run, almost sort of like art books that will focus on a particular issue, really, really dig and delve into it and get to some very serious and thought-provoking, emotive stories that with these cape and cowl books, there really isn't the time to get into. That's not really the purpose of these books. These books are the summer action blockbuster type of things. Dark Knight, obviously, The Dark Knight Rises, which just came out, I wouldn't say it's a popcorn action movie, but it is very much an action movie, even though it's more character-based. any of the Capes and Cowls of the DC Universe are that way. The Capes and Cowls of the Marvel Universe are more of the summer blockbuster popcorn flicks. So depending upon what type of movie you like, that will determine what type of comic you like. We've spoken about this on the podcast before, but hearkening back to what I was saying earlier about finding what's right for you, if you like either of those kinds of movies, this will give you a direction of where to look for the type of book that's going to be right for you. If you don't like any of either of those types of movies, well, then you know not to go for the main Capes and Cowls. Look at some of the alternative publishers. You might find things there that better fit and suit your tastes. The next thing, book I'm going to talk about, this is still in the DC Universe. I have a lot of DC books this week. I have no Marvel books, which is rather surprising. Normally I have a few kind of tossed in here, but I feel bad. I don't want people to think that I'm specifically dissing the Marvel Universe. I'm not. I just didn't have anything this week that I read from Marvel. So apologies to whoever the CEO is over at Marvel right now. I think it's Mickey Mouse. Anyways, next book up is Aquaman. Aquaman, he talks to fishies. That's what his character does. But as for everything else, that's not what this title is about. This title is about, and it has been historically about, a guy who is of two worlds, who fits in neither of them, and who's really struggled to find his place and continues to struggle throughout this book as well. This title is very good at giving you the feeling of why Aquaman is so distant and why he has a disconnect whenever he interacts with other members of, say, the Justice League, the big superhero group of the DC Universe, or when he tries to relate to his wife Mara or a professor in here named Professor Shen, who has had an antagonistic relationship with him in the past, or so it seems. At this point in the title, however, it's dealing a little less with that. It's gone off into a side story about a different group of heroic characters that Aquaman used to interact with and doesn't anymore for reasons that have yet to be revealed. They are on a particular mission, for lack of a better way to put it, to tie up some loose ends from something that happened to them previously, a mission that they had gone on together, and now it's kind of coming back to bite them in the butt. I'm trying to think how I want to state this. You don't need to be a fan of Aquaman to be a fan of this title. You don't have to be a fan of Caves and Cowles books to be a fan of this title. This is one that, while I was reading, my wife actually reached over, picked it up, and was flipping through, and enjoyed it just from this. She's one of the same people that would say she doesn't read comics, or she's not really a comic reader, she's not into it. This one doesn't need it. You don't have to be a comic reader to enjoy this book, to enjoy the story that's being told here. She did ask for a little bit of background and a little bit of explanation for some of the things that were going on, which I was able to provide because I'd been reading it. If you're going to jump in on this book at this point, you probably want to get a little bit of background on it, maybe get one of the trade paperbacks, collecting the first few issues together so you can read up that far and kind of see where this is, where it's going. It's only 11 issues in, so I would highly recommend that if you're going to do it. The type of people that would like this title, if you've ever felt ostracized, if you've ever felt like you just don't belong, or that you have, that you're on the outside, this is a good title for people who share those kinds of feelings, because they'll be able to empathize with Arthur Curry, Aquaman, on a much deeper level than readers who are in the popular crowd or perceive themselves to be in the popular crowd, because of the isolation that he has to deal with and that he is fighting. So if you like stories about loners, or you like stories about guys or people who are dealing with their own personal demons, this is another good title for you. This one's more dramatic than the other titles in the DC Universe, at least in their main lines. So this is one that is worth picking up for any of those. This is also being written by Jeff Johns, the same guy who was writing Green Lantern, who did the Darkest Night, or Blackest Night, excuse me, that I spoke of earlier. And Jeff Johns has a very, very good knack for reinventing old characters, which Aquaman is. He's excellent at making them relevant, making them believable, and making them into something that you honestly month to month, want to find out what's happening to them because you can get so invested with them. So, moving on from Aquaman, another one from DC. I have a few more from the DC universe. This one is The Fury of Firestorm, the Nuclear Men. The Firestorm character is one that probably nobody knows. Unless you were reading comics and unless you were into the DC universe back in, late 80s or maybe a small chunk of the early 2000s, you probably don't know the character. Firestorm was the invention of somebody named Professor Stein, who through some accident and the use of this thing he had invented fused together into a superhero called Firestorm. Firestorm had the ability to manipulate things on the molecular level, anything that was inorganic, to change it into anything else. He was sort of the great transmuter, if you want to look at it that way. He could turn lead into gold type of thing by manipulating the atoms and the molecules and literally converting the lead to gold by adding more protons and electrons to it to change the atomic number from lead to gold. Going on, that's what the character does. That's not what this title is about. In the new reboot, the Firestorm was created by something. The thing that Professor Stein created was called the Firestorm Protocol. The Firestorm Protocol in the new 52 has existed before Professor Stein. He worked on it along with others. And what has happened is the protocol was then shared out to foreign nations. So that not only was there the Firestorm of the United States, there were also people who had this power throughout the other countries, and each of them had their own names. In Russia, the Firestorm is called Pozar. In France, it's Firebird. In India, it's Kali something. I don't remember off the top of my head. But because it has been evenly distributed, or it has been somewhat distributed, not necessarily evenly, this is essentially the Firestorms are the modern day nuclear weapon. It's almost a modern day Cold War with the Firestorm protocols being in the middle of the arms race. And a black market version of the Firestorm protocols have been made available and are being sold to the more radical and terrorist Middle East nations, which are creating these suicide bomber nuclear men that are extremely dangerous, as powerful as nuclear weapons as far as their destructive capability, even more so. And they are off their rocker as far as their ideologies and what they want to do and their place in the global scene. So there are actually two Firestorms in the U.S. right now, Ronnie Raymond and Jason Rush. Sorry, I was blanking on his name there for a minute. Each of them can turn into a Firestorm their own, but there's something else going on where the two of them can actually join and fuse together into a bigger Firestorm called Fury, hence the Fury of Firestorm Nuclear Men. This has created an imbalance in the world powers. So this book is much more about international relations and how something like this would influence how countries would interact with each other, how these empowered beings would interact with each other, and what would happen if some of them don't appreciate their role in the global balance or don't feel that their position is appropriate for their role in the global balance. I would almost put this one along the lines of like a international intrigue or, you know, not foreign policy, but as I mentioned with the other books, anything Kevin Cowell, this is included in there as well. It's foreign policy, but on a very, very superficial manner. It's in the sense of, oh, he's trying to melt the Eiffel Tower. Well, that'll cause an international incident. You know, it's not really going to get into the nitty gritty of international politics and the international law, but at a very superficial level, that's basically what it's dealing with at this point. So I will say, being less recognized of a hero, that despite that, this book, out of the ones I've mentioned so far this week, is probably the one that I've enjoyed the most. Between the writing and between the situation and what's going on in the book, this one has been phenomenal. And it doesn't get a whole lot of accolades. It doesn't get a whole lot of attention, which I think is almost criminal because it really is such a good story. Not every story is for everybody, obviously, but this is one that I'm going to push very heavily towards anybody that's looking or liked things on the lines of Murder at 1800 or Broken Arrow or something like that. If you like those types of movies, you would probably like this book. So, again, if spend some time, do a little research, check into it, and if you can, pick it up just to give it a try. All of a sudden, I had this very odd feeling like I'm the reading rainbow of comic books, but you don't have to take my word for it. Last DC book, at least last specifically DC book I want to talk about this week is Justice League Dark. This one moves out of the realm of international intrigue into the realm of occult horror. Justice League Dark is the superhero group that is devised to deal with the supernatural threats in the superhero world. There are lots of characters who get their amazing, fantastic abilities from things of magic, be they a magical item or they are perhaps magicians themselves. The Justice League Dark book deals with the big scale things that occur in that power niche, if you want to think of it that way. The characters in this book have shown up and have been main characters in their own books. The, I hesitate to say lead of the Justice League Dark, John Constantine, had a movie a few years back. Keanu Reeves played the lead. He also had his own title that was done by Vertigo Comics, and I'll get into Vertigo in a minute. He originally was from the comic book series Swamp Thing, which also had a couple movies back in the late 80s, early 90s. And Constantine is the character described as the Laughing Magus, or the Laughing Mage. He's modeled physically after Sting, according to the original creator, and has a very British punk, screw the world attitude that's very snarky, very selfish, and immensely entertaining to read. Although I have said a lot of these books, what they do is not as important as what's the story they're trying to convey. This book is kind of the exception to the rule. What they are and what they do really is what's going on in the book and is very central to the story that they're trying to tell. When you're telling an occult horror story, though, that's kind of the shtick. I would say if you liked the movie Constantine, this is obviously a very good fit for you. Other things that would fall along, or fall in the same line, The Prophecy, what was the exorcism one from a while back? Oh, it was a really good one. Stigmata. That's what I was trying to think of. If you like Stigmata, this would be a good one for you. Getting away from the holy stuff though, and more kind of straight up occult, anything that has to do with black magic, anything that's kind of horror story-ish. If you like those styles of that genre, that's the genre of this book. So if you like those, check this out. To be honest, though, I'd be hard-pressed, I think, to find many people that enjoy horror and occult-type movies, films, TV shows that probably aren't at least mildly interested in comics already, because there is a lot of overlap between the two. Just personal opinion, I suppose. Anyways, moving on. The reason I said I would speak of Vertigo specifically, all the books that I've talked about so far have all been published by DC Comics, Detective Comics, distributors. Publishers, not distributors. DC also has and publishes a adult line of comics. And by that, I don't mean pornographic. I mean things that have much more violence, that deal with more adult stories and themes. That's the reason the Capes and Cowl books tend to be very superficial, is because they are intended for a teen audience. They're not really meant for people 18 and up. Vertigo, however, is for specifically mature readers, readers who are 18 and up. The two books from Vertigo that I wanted to hit on specifically for this week is Spaceman and American Vampire. I'll start with American Vampire, because A becomes 4S, and that's just how I want to do it. American Vampire deals with the story of vampires, obviously, but the idea that vampires, just like any other form of life on Earth, evolve over time and create different strains, different mutations. And in the late 19th century, a new strain of vampire came into existence in the Americas. And it kind of follows the story of the assumed progenitor of that mutation and his story kind of going through history. This is issue 29, so this has been going on for a little over 2 years now. So there's a good amount of backstory that I can't fully get into right now. So all I can kind of do is explain where this book is right now. And hopefully the little short description that I just gave you is enough to pique your interest. This, just like Justice League Dark, is very much involved in the occult and in the supernatural type realms and horror story type of thing. So if you like that type of story, you'd like this type of story. But also because this is going through different points in American history, if you're a bit of an Americana buff, or you have things about American history that you particularly like, or certain points in time of American history that you like, it's worth checking into for those things as well, even if you're only hitting on particular story arcs. They spend some time in World War II. They spend a little bit of time in Vietnam. This, at the point it's at now, is during the Red Scare of the 1950s. And the vampire characters are working with the government not to expose communists, but to expose other vampires, what they're calling the Carpathian vampires, which is the European version. So you have this great sort of compare and contrast of their extermination of vampires following the same types of methods and methodologies that were used on innocent citizens during the 1950s. Scott Snyder, I've mentioned before, who's the writer of this book, I'm a bit of a fanboy for his work, so for me to gush on that it'd be falling on deaf ears at this point, especially if any of you have listened to this podcast before. You already know of my love for this writer. It's an excellent story. It's an excellent book. American Vampire has gotten lots of critical acclaim from many, many different reviewers. It's won awards. If you're looking to get into comics and you want something that's not your traditional Cape and Cowls, you want something with a little more meat on its bones, something, and of course, and you're over 18 and you can read things like this, and you enjoy good horror stories, not just your standard vampire stories, but ones that are a little bit more involved. If you wanted to, say, watch a more adult version of Supernatural, or... Yeah, that's even a bit too Dawson Creek. I don't know. Oh, If you enjoy True Blood, perfect example, then American Vampire would be an excellent place for you to jump into comics if you don't read them already. My understanding of True Blood, because I haven't watched it myself, this would fall kind of into that same arena where it's a whole lot of interpersonal conflict along with the dealing with the inner demons of the vampires themselves. So what they are, how they work, and all that kind of neat stuff. Moving on from that, the other Vertigo book this week. I apologize. I'm going to actually take a second here because I just realized I've been kind of droning and that really sucks. So I apologize if you've been listening this far. I do not mean to drone. It's actually after midnight right now. Like I said, I've been fighting this dripping that's going on in my nose. So I'm going to do my best. Try not to drone anymore. I'm going to sit up a bit here. There we go. Get a little energy back. And I'm going to talk about Spaceman. Spaceman is set in a halfway between distant future and near future. It's far enough in the future that lots of things have changed, but not so far that the world is unrecognizable in like a Blade Runner weird quasi future type of thing. Actually, give me a second here. I'm going to adjust my mic stand, which I think you guys probably heard it fall earlier. So I'm going to loosen this up a bit. And there we go. Okay. That's a bit better. Now it's actually pointing at my mouth instead of pointing at my throat. So, much better. Okay. Sorry about that. So like I said, it's not really that Blade Runner type future. It's much more dirty. It's a dystopian future where people are, large amounts of the population are living in squalor. They're living outside of a walled city. That's the sort of future utopia. And this follows the journey of a spaceman, which are these chimpanzee human hybrids, which were created specifically to go to Mars for whatever reason, a reason that has not been divulged yet. This is issue 8 of 9. There's only going to be one more issue after this one. But the story follows not just the spaceman and what was going on to him or going on with him during the time he spent on Mars, which is in the past as far as this book is concerned. It instead is dealing with a corporate sponsored kidnapping of a reality TV show, young girl, a daughter that was adopted by this celebrity couple, a sort of, Brad and Angelina Jolie type situation where they've adopted in lots and lots of kids from not well-to-do countries. And one of their children has been kidnapped and is being ransomed. Well, it seems like the whole thing is being set up from the inside as a big publicity stunt to get more attention to the TV show. And the spaceman, Orson, I believe is his name, is now caught up in the middle of this. He's obviously a bit dim. He's not... I'm trying to think how best to say this without... and still try to keep it PC. He's slow. We'll just leave it at that. Because of the whole, you know, human chimpanzee mix type of thing, makes him not exactly the sharpest tool in the box. But at the same time, he's far from stupid. He might be slow, or he may not be as eloquent or intellectual as others that are around him. But he, like I said, is by no means stupid. So he kind of gets an idea of what's going on. He's trying to save this little girl as best he can, while at the same time dealing with these dregs of society that he's living around and these money-grubbing corporate PR whores that are doing everything they can to exploit the situation to get as much viewer revenue out of it as they can. What I described really is kind of what's going on in this title. If you want to read a story that is thumbing its nose at the current Hollywood, environment, this would be a good book to read. I can't think really of any TV show or movie, analogs that would go along with this. I'm kind of racking my brain here at the moment to try to think of one. Actually, as bad as it is for me to kind of say this, if you like laughing at Jersey Shore, pick up this book, because this really is a condemnation of that mentality and that just overblown surrealism that is being passed off as reality. So, it is Jason and I have mentioned before, we've talked about this title previously on here. It's a difficult book to get into because there's a very specific lingo and vernacular that's used in this world that you can pick up the longer you read it, but initially it's going to be very, very off-putting. Instead of talking about if they think something or they know something, they say, do you brain, or, you know, do you get it kind of thing. That's just one example of how they speak. It's more involved than that, just as everything I've talked about has, you know, different levels of being involved. But another very, very good title. Like I said, this is number 8 of 9. It's only a 9-book run. I'm sure it'll come out as a trade paperback. So even if you don't go back and find it as the issues, if you're out doing your, you know, hey, I'm going to check out comics and I'm going to look into it type thing, that is one worth keeping an eye out for when it does come out in trade paperback. It would be well worth your time if, like I mentioned, you enjoy that type of story or that type of interaction. This is the book to go for. Oh, wow. We got a couple books left. This is a lot longer than the other solo podcasts I'm sure you guys are used to. So I hope you're getting a lot out of this. I'm putting a lot into it. You have no idea. Okay, next up, this is from Image Comics. It's a title called Grim Leaper, A Love Story to Die For. This one is going to be very, very hard to kind of explain. I mean, the concept is easy to explain, but to try to find the type of person that would be into this book and not into comics necessarily anyways might, again, be kind of difficult. The quick synopsis of the book itself is, there's a guy who keeps dying, and every time he dies, he is pulled into a new body that is about to die. Generally speaking, in some fantastically grotesque way possible, which is depicted graphically in the book. I did mention this is Image Comics, but I should be more specific. It's Image's Shadow Line, which, like the other things I mentioned, is a mature book. It's for mature readers. Because of the graphicness and the detail of the deaths, that's kind of what makes it, you don't want to show it to your kids. As the title implies, they call it a love story to die for. There is a sort of dark comedy love story going on amongst this. The guy that keeps dying runs into, almost serendipitously, a female, a girl who is doing the same thing. She keeps dying and appearing in new bodies. And because they have found each other and they're describing what's going on, they form this sort of instant connection to each other, and a very romantic one at that, through this shared experience. And so now this story is the burgeoning of their love story, but in this very twisted kind of way where it's very fatalistic. They will die, come back in new bodies, have to find each other through some twist of fate because they never know who the other person is going to jump into. And when they do find each other, they go off on these wild adventures where they're not really concerned for their personal well-being because they know, well, we're just going to die soon anyways. And when we do, we're going to come back again. So what's the point of being careful? So they get an almost sort of like a Thelma and Louise kind of Bonnie and Clyde thing going on, where there's a complete disregard for not just mortality, but morality at the same time. I don't know if I can explain it any better than that. And I don't know if there's anything else I can say about this book that would describe it any further than I already did. So, that's about as much as I can get through on this. If that sounds like something that you would enjoy, I would recommend picking it up. The author of this one is Curtis J. Wiebe, who also does the book Peter Panzerfaust, which I know we've mentioned on other podcasts before. Peter Panzerfaust is a rewriting of the mythology of Peter Pan, but in World War II France, where Peter and the Lost Boys are actually French freedom fighters, a bunch of orphans that were orphaned by the German army and are basically performing guerrilla attacks against the German soldiers in during France's occupation. He's also done written a couple other things as well that have made Jason and I smile and sit up and go, hey, that sounds kind of fun. He's an author worth keeping an eye on. Something I should have mentioned this probably way back in the very beginning of this show. As you enter into comics, and even if you don't or aren't into them, if they're not your thing, it does make sense to keep an eye out for, if you do start to see things that you do want to read or that you do find interesting, pay attention to the artists, pay attention to the authors, the authors usually more so, because it'll be a lot easier to find other things that they've done, and you'll probably enjoy those too. I know I have favorites. I know Jason has favorites. Everybody kind of has their favorite authors and stories that they like, so pay close attention to that, just the same way you would with any type of literary novel, if you have a particular author that you follow. The same is true for comics. Whew. Okay. I apologize. I have become so congested over the course of doing this. Hopefully it's just because it's getting late and my body doesn't like being up late, and so it's trying to tell me to go to bed. Matter of fact, you know what? I had one more comic I was going to go over tonight, but I'm going to skip it because a follow-up to it is going to be coming out in a week or two anyways, so I will review it then. I'm going to put these to the side. There are, however, some news items from this week that I wanted to go over quick. Stuff that's of interest that I think once you get, well, for those of you who are already into comic books and haven't seen this stuff already, this is news for you guys. Batman Inc. number 3 has been delayed by a month. This occurred because of the Dark Knight shooting in, pardon me, in Aurora. DC felt that the, and this is a direct quote, content that might be perceived as insensitive in light of the recent events. So, for the sensibilities of the people, friends, and family who were affected by the shooting in Aurora, the title's been pushed back. Reddit.com, for those of you who don't know what Reddit is a completely user-populated site of links that people, users post links to. More than that, they also will post articles, images, whatever else. There's particular subgroupings of Reddit called subreddits where people can post more specific content that's kind of geared towards particular interests. I know Tampa, the city of Tampa where we live, has a subreddit of its own. Many sports teams will tend to have their own subreddits. There's Reddits for home brewing. There's Reddits for, well, but basically anything that you have an interest in, there's a subreddit for. One of the subreddits is known as IMA, which is IAMA. And that is a place for people who are unique in some way, shape, or form, either due to their profession or due to a situation that they've been in or because they are a celebrity. They will go on there and they'll do what's called an AMA, which is an Ask Me Anything, or AMAA, Ask Me Almost Anything. Coming up in the next month or so, there's going to be a few of these AMAs done by John Kricfalusi, who I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Let me say instead, the creator of Ren Stimpy will be doing an Ask Me Anything on July 30th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Dick DeBartola of Mad Magazine writer and from the G Wiz will be doing an Ask Me Anything on August 2nd at 4 o'clock p.m. And the man himself, Stan Lee, will do an AMA on Reddit.com on August 14th at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. There have been lots of great AMAs out there. I would recommend if you are just curious about AMAs at all. Look for AMAs by Neil deGrasse Tyson. Did a fantastic one. I saw one for Bill Nye the Science Guy today, actually, July 29th. That was a very, very interesting read. There's also AMAs from people that were involved in the Aurora shooting, to bring that back up. AMAs from the neurobiologists, from actors and authors and writers. Kevin Smith, I know, has done one, as has, Mr. Suspenders himself. CNN correspondent did a news talk show. Larry King. God, that was painful. Larry King did an AMA just a couple days ago, which was a very interesting read. So if you're not on Reddit or you don't have a Reddit account, I would recommend getting an account and subscribing to the AMA subreddit. You will not be disappointed. There's lots of cool things to go through there all the time. Very, very much worth checking out. A lot of celebrities are doing more and more AMAs now because they've realized that not only is it a great way to get a lot of attention very quickly, especially if they're trying to promote something, a lot of times I find that it's really just kind of fun. So, anyways, a couple more things. Grant Morrison not working on DC Ongoings. Grant Morrison, of course, being the very prolific comic book writer who has done many, many, many great books that I am not going to try to list off now because I'll probably fuck it up and will misquote and grant him credit on things that he didn't do and not grant him credit on things that he did do. Anyways, Action Comics, which he's working on right now, number 16 will be his last issue, as will Batman Inc. number 12. He's going to be working on a limited series for Multiversity and Wonder Woman. And if you want to, you can find the article describing all of this at comicbooknews.com. And last news item, and this is one that I feel bad saying, but I am glad to hear, Rob Liefeld will be leaving DC Comics shortly after 2013, according to some Twitter posts that he had made about a different author's departure from DC Comics. I believe he tweeted, first was, "I'll be right behind you," which caused a lot of people to speculate that Rob Liefeld was immediately leaving DC Comics. He then clarified that by saying, not anytime soon, but 2013 is coming up pretty quickly. So the overall assumption based on what he said is that he will be leaving DC Comics shortly after 2013, probably February or March of that year, I would believe. So, we've made it. The end of the podcast. And for those of you who normally listen to the hour that Jason and I normally do, I did an hour solo. Wow, this is a lot more difficult than I thought it would be. But despite the difficulty and the hardships that I have endured and that you have endured by listening to me, even through some of my more droning and monotonous periods, which I sincerely apologize for, I'd like to say thank you very, very much for listening. I hope you have gotten something out of this. I hope I have inspired you, if you are not a comic book fan, to become at least a comic book observer and to spend a little bit of time trying to find the comic that's right for you. I promise you it's out there. It really, really is. And even if it's not in traditional Capes and Cowls, even if it's not in the books that Jason and I review, it may not even be in Western comics. It might be out on the web as a web comic, or it might be over in Japan as a, or Korea as a manga, or the, forget the name for the Korean version of manga. It's out there. Please try to go find it. Don't deny yourself a form of media based on a preconceived notion. And as long as you can do that, don't do it just for comics. Do it for all forms of media. I know I've stressed that a lot this week, but like I said, it's an important thing that I think is worth reinforcing. So, off my soapbox, onto the contact information. You can find all that contact information at about.me/comicbooktesseract. That includes the website, thecomicbooknerd.com, our Facebook accounts, our G+ accounts, our Twitter accounts, our email address, and our phone and voicemail numbers. All of that is at about.me/comicbooktesseract. If you want to get in contact with us for anything, be it comments, questions, or if you want to tell me that, hey, I was right and you found that comic book that was right for you, I would love to hear that. Or if you think that I'm an utter and complete nutter and that I have no idea what the hell I'm talking about and you want to yell at me and rip me a new one, do that too. By all means, I don't care what you say. Communication is the best thing for us to have. So that way we can do everything we can to make this show better for you. Now, I'm going to take my congested and groggy ass up to bed. But before I do that, I would like to say thank you again for listening. Good night. And we will see you all the next time we step inside the Tesseract.